on this episode of Edge of the Web.
You can have content on your website that will work, but if nobody sees it, it's no good.
Right.
Your weekly digital marketing trends with industry trend-setting guests. You're listening and watching Edge of the Web. Hear and see more at edgeofthewebradio.com. Now, alongside Tom Broadbeck, here's your host, Aaron Sparks.
Well, welcome back to The Edge. Hey, you haven't seen us for a few shows or a few weeks now. We're back amongst you, and we took a little bit of a break. Right, Tom?
We took a break, yes. Sometimes you just got to get away from the kids. And by the kids, I mean the audience.
So you're literally telling our audience that we had to leave them. I'm so sorry, kids. We'll never leave you again. Hey, we're broadcasting from Edge Media Studios, located in downtown Indianapolis, Indiana. Every week, we bring you the latest trends in digital marketing and marketing influencers. You can check out all our recent shows at edgeofthewebradio.com. We're powered by Site Strategics, your digital marketing pioneers, focused on specializing in the agile digital marketing strategy and execution. So if you're wondering what that is, make sure you go over to sitestrategics.com, S-I-T-E, strategics.com. You'll see the brand new website, brand new focus on agile, and you check out everything that we're doing there. You can see the entire team as well. That's one cool thing that we rolled out with that site is you can see everybody's mugshots, and you can see everybody.
Our mugshots.
Assume the position.
With sign, numbers, profile.
Well, I'm your host, Aaron Sparks, founder and CEO of Site Strategics. The reason why we do this show in particular is we have been doing this actually for 5 years, over 5 years, and we want to give back to the community of digital marketers that are looking for understanding of what this is. I mean, there's so many different aspects in digital marketing, social media, search engine optimization, search engine marketing, content marketing, conversion rate optimization, to mention a few. Well, this show has been here this entire time to kind of demystify, debunk some of the things that are out there and help provide you legitimate tactics to use for your online success. In studio with me is Thomas Broadbeck, Digital Media Director of Edge Media Studios.
Hi.
Hello, sir.
How's it going?
Yeah, I'm going great now that we're back with the kids.
I know, right? It's good to be back.
And let me introduce our guest. His name is Chad Pullett, partner and VP of audience at Native Advertising Institute. Chad, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
And he's in studio.
I mean, it's a rarity nowadays. Everybody just wants to, everybody wants to just be at their computer and call in. What's up with that?
Well, I just came here from Europe just for the show. So.
That is fantastic.
No, not really. I just live 30 minutes up the road.
And you know what was killing me is that Chad and I have known each other online for well over a decade, and we've run in different channels with different companies, and we've never actually physically met. And that's on me, man, because I should have reached out a long time ago.
Oh well, we're here now. So let's rock the
let's
mic.
Rock it. All right. So, hey, for everyone who's watching the show, make sure that you ask questions on Facebook. We're on Facebook Live. And one of the main things that why we're using that platform is we can hear from our audience. So if you're not there, they would be hearing this, right?
Yeah. So. No, it's just, if they're listening on the podcast, every Thursday, this is a Friday show.
Right.
Just the way with things worked out. But every Thursday at 3 p.m., we're doing a show for Edge of the Web, so everybody can tune into that, or you can listen to the podcast as well. But I'm monitoring Facebook now, and if you tweet us your questions as well, if you want to tweet us rather than comment on Facebook, but I'm monitoring, so ask away.
Tom is at the helm. And on top of that, you know what? Check out all the favorite podcast platforms that you listen to. We're on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Podbean, Spreaker, Acast, and any others recently?
Nope.
Okay. That's it. But if we're not where you are and you like to consume audio, let us know and we'll certainly get the show there. All right. The segment is actually brought to you by SEMrush, the world's leading competitive intelligence for keyword research, a tool trusted by over 1 million online marketers every day. In fact, I was in there, I think, 3 or 4 times today. They use that so they can get an edge over the competition. Therefore, they wanted to jump in and be a sponsor with it. So if you want to see exactly where your competitors are on a regular basis and where they're advertising online or organically positioned, then head on over to SEMrush.com/edge of the web, and you can get your free 14-day trial of SEMrush. And I guarantee you'll want to jump in there immediately because it's fantastic data,
fantastic tool, and you'll get lost in all the different reports and all the different things you can look up about your competitors, about your website. So keyword research data and all that.
So what you're saying is a complete time waster because you just get sucked into SEMrush, right?
Hey guys, true story.
Yeah.
SEMrush was one of the first tools I used late last decade for SEO.
Yep.
And I wore a lot of hats. I do sales as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I would use their competitive data to help sell different SEO projects and web projects.
Yep.
And it worked like a charm.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's a beautiful thing. And I think we've been using them for probably 6 to 8 years, if I'm not mistaken. But it's a fantastic tool, and they've expanded their tool set. They've got projects, they've got incredible social media and branding tracking tools. So check that out, because it is a fantastic partner that we have in them. And I mean, just from a tool set for a digital marketer, it's a must.
Yeah,
you have to have that. All right, so let's take you through the latest digital marketing news.
I was very excited to start my reportings.
This week's trending topics.
All right. Hey, well, we're in the news section here. And what do you think about that news intro? That was pretty snazzy. Huh?
That's pretty snazzy.
Hey, we also got news. We got new Edge Media or Edge of the Web Edge Media swag that we're going to
start. Oh, yeah, you are. I should have worn mine, but.
Yeah,
we would be wearing the same shirt then. That would just
be kind of weird.
Yeah,
uncomfortable.
Maybe we should just get more shirts.
I think we are. In fact, we're going to be having some Edge of the Web shirts coming up very soon, where we'll be giving away some shirts based on your questions and surveys. So
yeah.
So we're going to be giving our audience some fun stuff to play around with.
Yes, can't wait.
And all the kids are going to get there. Gonna get dressed.
Okay, I thought you were gonna make that milkshake line again.
Nope. I'm only allowed to do that once a month. All right, from Marketing Land. Hey, we've got Marketing Land from Tim Peterson. Facebook aims for TV ad dollars with household wide ad targeting. Tom, tell me about this guy.
So Facebook is basically the way TV works is they do it by household viewership.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they do their ratings. So the Nielsen ratings, like this many households are viewing a specific TV show. So Facebook's going to kind of adopt the same thing with their ads. So here, just reading from articles, Facebook's giving advertisers a way to target everyone who lives in the same household and to see how their ads performed at a household level. The company announced on Tuesday, Facebook's new household ad targeting option appears designed to appeal to brand advertisers accustomed to trying to win over households with TV ads, which are among the advertisers that Facebook's trying to win over with its mid-roll ads and their original programming that they are developing. We've talked about that in the past, how Facebook's kind of, you've talked about it, how they're trying to develop their own channel.
Right.
And actually, I have an Android TV, and they actually now have an Android TV app that's just Facebook Video.
Hmm.
Now, so that's also starting to roll out there.
Yeah,
so.
It really is. It really is. And I think we're also talking native advertising. And I mean, Chad, you're all inside of native advertising. We're going to be talking about that soon. But what do you think about this news article, man?
So I actually have a lot to say about this. So this is a big deal.
Yep.
And it's a big deal for a reason you guys might not be thinking and the audience might not be thinking. But your typical television ad executive,
okay,
they spend, for every dollar they spend on creation, they spend $5 on distribution.
Okay.
Do you know what the typical content marketer spends? What that ratio is? It's the opposite.
Really?
It's the opposite. So if Facebook can tap in to what TV ad executives are doing,
right,
that 1-to-5 ratio,
mm-hmm,
that is a boom for them. They're gonna make so much money if that kind of targeting
mm-hmm
taps into that group, Like, sure. I think it will.
Yeah, and
it's going to be huge.
Especially from the Facebook side of things, they have those demographics that they can key in as well that, you know, general TV, they don't have.
Yes.
They can target, or Charmin or P&G can target their ads specifically to a certain audience. And I think that makes that dollar even more valuable for them. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you think they're going to be sharing some of that data with the TV executives to be able to help bring better content and better articulation over their ads?
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Because it's a new, so Facebook can sell to marketers, advertisers, whoever, but that group probably hasn't thought too much about spending their ad dollars on Facebook.
No, you're absolutely right. And I mean, there's going to be this is the realm of big data,
sure.
And there's going to be a lot of parties starting to, yeah. To
and,
share
and it's
content.
Crazy the information people give to Facebook.
Yeah.
And they have a ton of data that TV, normal TV, local TV stations just don't have.
Yeah, look what I'm giving data to Apple right now on my body.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Android, Google's right here, right?
Yeah.
I'm wet wired in the back of my neck just for that. Yeah. Well, speaking of Google, from Search Engine Journal, Google posts share messages in search results from Google My Business. This is from Matt Southern. We've got Google has actually officially rolled out the Google all Google posts to all small businesses with a Google My Business listing. Ugh, say that sentence three times again. Google posts allow small business to publish messages to Google My Business, which means that the messages will also show up in their Google My Business page when it surfaces on search results. So now you have new level of communication and brand awareness going into the Google My Business posting, which was really dry for a very long period of time. What did you have? I mean, it comes back from the old Google local days,
mm-hmm.
but you had coupons, you had hours, you had some graphics and photos that you throw up there. Now mm-hmm. you're actually able to pipe in your Google posts into there. The post will appear as a small snippet, which consumers can actually tap on to read in full. Google suggests, I bet they're AMP-oriented, Google suggests using the feature to keep customers informed about daily specials, upcoming events, new products, or anything else that can help you drive business. Is this just them trying to keep the Google Plus, the Google Post environment alive?
I think that's an ad revenue for them. Jim, go back full screen there to the article here, and then scroll down and show our audience what it looks like. So this image right here.
Mm-hmm.
So if that picture on the left there, that shows if you were to search your brand, a brand in Google, and then there's two little posts down there at the bottom, and they're carouseled.
Yep.
That's great for a local business to be able to highlight a local sale or a special offer that's going on or a discount code or whatever, an order now button.
We finally have control of the Google local environment.
Yeah. So I think they're giving them as taste now, and maybe it could be a, you want to enhance your local presence, give us an extra $10 a month and you can have this little feature right there when somebody searches your brand.
Yep.
It's almost like a tweet inside of Google.
That's what it looks like. Yeah. It's Google Plus on your My Business page.
Hmm. I think that's the only place it makes smart sense to you to leverage the Google Plus posting environment because, my Lord, nobody's in that space. It's dead space except for Google employees, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, be able to have that customized messaging. Now you're going to have graphic challenges, and you're going to have a whole nother level of distinguished USPs that are in that physical space there. So, and guess what? It just so happens to fill up the entire smartphone screen.
Yeah, and I think further down in that article, it talks about the ability to place calls to action.
Yep,
beautiful.
CTAs, and I think that has a lot of potential. If you were to build some type of strategy around this tactic,
sign up for a newsletter and buy a product. Oh my gosh, are we literally seeing the entire business ecosystem right there on Google?
Yeah, it looks like it, and it's all like you said before, it's all AMP,
right?
Optimized, and I mean, there's that, we talk about the secret war between Facebook and Google dwell time and all that other stuff.
Yep.
This is should have a good impact on dwell time for
Google. You better believe it.
Yeah. You're not going to Facebook to search for a local brand, you know, so this is just another way to Google kind of just make that gap even wider between them and Facebook for local searches.
You'll go there for a local brand if you want to give a review.
But I mean, if you're searching for a local pizza company, you're not going to Facebook.
No, you're not. No, absolutely not. Sorry, Facebook. You still don't have that. They're listening to us right now. You realize that?
Oh, yeah.
Stream just died. kidding. Just gave my director a heart attack. All right. Search Engine Journal. We have another news item. Canadian courts can now force Google to remove search results worldwide. That just came through this last week. This is also from Matt Southern. Tom, tell us about this.
So basically what happened, quick summary, is Company A designed a product. Company B stole their designs. And in the process of the lawsuit, Company A asked Google to de-index Company B, essentially. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So Google complied, but they de-indexed, and this took place in Canada. And so they de-indexed the website in the Canadian search results, but they didn't remove it from the U.S. or Europe or France or Australian or whatever. And so the lawsuit went to the Supreme Court, and they were like, why aren't you removing it worldwide? And so Canadian Supreme Court ruled 7-2 in favor of having Google removing or de-indexing that Company B's search results worldwide, not just the Canadian, not the Canadian search results.
So our Supreme Court actually?
No, the Canadian. So this all took place in Canada.
So, I mean, the world doesn't have to abide by the Canadian ruling, however.
That's what Google was arguing, and that's how I went all the way to the Supreme Court. So,
right.
But that's Google. Supreme Court in Canada said, the internet has no borders. Its natural habitat is global. The only way to ensure that the injunction attained its objective was to have it apply to where Google operates globally.
Hmm. Yeah. All that. And
so
that,
yeah, I don't. I get. I think I said more on Google's side of things.
Yeah.
Well, he's here, but I think it should all work itself out anyway. Because if they're not making that product anymore, according to the lawsuit or whatever. They're not making that product anymore, so that product shouldn't have be made by them anymore. So I don't know why it matters.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah. There's
they can't buy that product.
The concept gets down to jurisdiction and are you actually part of that country if you're serving up content in that country? I mean, the internet does, if you're trying to define borders or not define borders, mm-hmm. the fact of the matter is you're going to them.
Right.
You're going to their servers, that is located in California and the rest of the nation, all the rest of the world right now. But it's their property, is it not?
So I see the two sides. Now, Company A and Company B are both located in Canada.
Right. Correct.
So if myself as an American can order that product, let's just say that product is still on their site, you just can't see it in Canada.
Correct.
And then they manufacture that product and send it to me here.
Yep.
They're in violation of the order of the first lawsuit, mm-hmm. with Company A.
Mm-hmm.
Normally I would side with Google on this. The headline is a little misleading.
Mm-hmm.
But because they're both Canadian companies, this is a pretty high barrier to hit. I mean, you literally have to have two companies. They both have to reside in Canada.
Yep.
And one of them has to be sued by the other and win. So I don't think this is going to have much of an impact. But then again, you could also argue that this is a slippery slope. And where does it end?
Yes.
So those are the two arguments. I'm kind of torn myself. If it wasn't a Canadian company,
right,
I'd be freaking out.
Yeah, because all of a sudden, I mean, now you've got a court system deciding world governance of content on the from the online space, right? Mm-hmm. But you have the unprecedented. This is setting a precedent where anyone can go after anyone. Then you've got patent law infringements and everything else under the sun that could just explode.
Yeah,
that would get very, very ugly. All righty. So, hey, regarding some non-ungly content, why don't you actually sign up for our newsletter? You can text to the number 22828, the word Edge Talk, and we'll send you these articles. We'll send you some great information, interview summaries, as well as some additional nuggets of gold inside the newsletter completely free. Or you can just go to edgeofthewebradio.com and sign up right there. We'll not use your email for anything else except sending some great thoughtful reminders of who we interviewed, what we're doing, and what's coming up next week, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
So follow all our featured trends over at edgeofthewebradio.com. Now let's deep dive with this week's featured guest.
Now it's time for our Edge of the Web featured interview with Chad Pollitt, partner and VP of audience at the Native Advertising Institute.
So we're going to reintroduce our guest today. It's Chad Pollitt. He's a partner and VP of audience of the Native Advertising Institute. Thanks so much for joining us today again.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks
Excellent.
For having me.
You're more than welcome. So Chad has been creating a profitable online campaign, series of campaigns for over 15 years from some of the world's most profitable brands. He's also a member of the Forbes Top 100 list and the author of the Native Advertising Manifesto, the Content Promotion Manifesto, and 51 things that your mother taught you about in inbound marketing. I got to say, my mother taught me nothing about inbound marketing.
Oh, she did. Trust me.
Okay, so I got to hear about that. Okay, so what did my mom do? My mom's British, by the way.
Okay.
So what did she tell me about teach me about inbound marketing?
So basically, that book is 51 comments or sayings that your mother would say to you as a kid.
Got it.
Like, don't pick that scab; it's gonna scar, or your face is gonna stick like that. And I analogized 51 of those comments directly to a tactic or a strategy in digital marketing or inbound marketing.
Fantastic. No, I get it. I get it.
So so what did your mom normally yell at you?
Aaron, put that thing down.
I think that one's in there.
Don't light that on fire.
Pretty much.
Stop playing with the matches.
No, I don't have that one.
You're beginning to get a theme there, aren't you? Well, Chad, tell us, how did you get your job?
So it's weird. So technically, I work for a publishing company.
Okay.
Okay, and I'm a partner in that publishing company. It's a model where we create content, we do custom research, we don't do hardly any consulting. We go around to conferences and speak globally, and we have our own conference. Our big native advertising conference is called Native Advertising Days, and that's in Berlin in November. Okay. And anyway, so prior to the Native Advertising Institute, I worked for Relevance, which is an award-winning publication as well as an agency.
Right.
So while there at Relevance, I was tasked, it's like 3 or 4 years ago now, to build an online publication and monetize it.
Hmm.
And we were able to grow our audience to 50,000 subscribers within 6 months. And the thing about the success of that online publication was that we were the first and only publication that focused on content promotion and distribution.
Mm-hmm.
And because we stuck our flag in the sand on that topic, that niche,
right,
it just attracted content marketers like crazy.
Yep.
As you can imagine.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So I took everything I learned and all the research and content creation. I mean, I've written for the last 10 years, I've written over 900 articles.
Oh my Lord.
And that's nothing compared to other people.
Oh yeah. I know.
So I took all that and, people started to recognize throughout the industry, the type of work that I was doing and the research I was doing and the topics that I wrote about. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, I spoke at, 2 conferences in Europe last year. And the team that put that on was the team at the Native Advertising Institute.
Oh.
And they approached me at the end of the year and asked me if I'd be interested in coming on board and helping them get to the next level. So I said yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
So tell us about Native Advertising Institute.
So the business model is that of how a publisher would be.
Right.
Okay. But we consider ourselves a think tank. So our mission is essentially to help facilitate the growth and the maturity of native advertising as an industry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because there's some shady areas today in native advertising.
Right.
And publishers are really starting to get involved in long form native advertising, like the Orange is the New Black article on Netflix,
yep,
or by Netflix,
yep,
on the New York Times. So we are trying to be the embodiment of the thought leadership around all things native advertising.
And to set the standards.
Pretty much, yeah. Right. And to be that one-stop resource.
Roger that.
Whether you're a publisher, whether you're a content marketer, mm-hmm, a media buyer, we even help facilitate the ad tech space of them getting together, right? So normally Outbrain and Taboola wouldn't hang out together in the same,
right,
at the same party,
right,
but at the Native Advertising Institute, they can hang out all they want. Right?
It's a safe zone.
Exactly.
It's not unlike SEO back 10 years ago. Literally, I mean, there's a couple different paths to go down, and you in native advertising there are some shady stuff, and you gotta. We are smarter environment now from marketers, and we will, you know, we're in also the fake news realm, and mm-hmm, I mean that's kind of disturbing the entire environment as well. But I mean, we need. And we as marketers are readily adopting platforms, not publishers, that can actually separate the wheat from the chaff and actually bring truth into this entire space. I mean, we're much more apt to not be led astray by some dirty tactics, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So native advertising, for those our listeners who don't know what the term native advertising, can you give us that breakout quick 30-second session of what our listeners should understand about native advertising?
Okay, so I'll start with the definition.
Yep.
So essentially the definition is paid advertising that matches the form, feel, and function, mm-hmm, of the organic media that it is with.
Right.
Okay, so let me give you some examples. A lot of people don't know this, but there's something we call influencer advertising. Now, some people just call it all influencer marketing, right? It's hot right now.
Sure.
It's really hot right now. But if you use a platform that facilitates a financial transaction between you and that influencer, then it becomes native advertising.
Okay.
As opposed to going on BuzzSumo, doing a couple searches, finding a person and tweeting at them or sending them an email and saying, hey, can you give us a tip and we'll put it on our top 10 list article.
Right. Right.
So that's earned media. I'm talking about the paid media part of that.
Yep, got it.
So that's an example of native advertising. Another example of native advertising would be, say, if I go to the local IBJ, the Indianapolis Business Journal, mm-hmm, and as a marketer, as a brand, I pay them and have them write an article, a real news story, that is relevant to my brand,
mm-hmm,
and then they put my logo up on it and say that we sponsored that brand.
Right.
That's long form native advertising.
Got it.
Then there's your programmatic native advertising. Now, generally, this is what you see at the bottom of those articles, mm-hmm, but there's also there's the widgets. They usually have six, mm-hmm, different articles in them, but they can also exist in feed. So if you're on a mobile site, publisher site, and there's just article,
right,
there may be a promoted article in there too, hmm, that's sponsored, right? So same as with Facebook, how there's promoted posts,
right?
Same concept. Okay, then you have social media native advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all social has gone native, so if it's in feed, it's native advertising. Okay.
Yep.
And then lastly, there's another category we call non-programmatic. That could be things like virtual reality native advertising, or they even have there's audio native advertising, video. There's even specialized native advertising for e-commerce, hmm, sites.
Very cool. So you're going to get much more nuanced in how those platforms deliver that native advertising. But we're all getting accustomed to it. And this, I mean, the primers of these native advertising. The primer of native advertising was the mashup, the changing Google mashup of results, because we were seeing a lot of things that were contextually based, right? And the audience was getting more and more accustomed to say, oh, okay, well, I see it's advertising, but it's really useful, right?
Yeah.
So that's the construct, and now it's everywhere in all these different consumable platforms.
Yeah, and I just, at the beginning of the year, I spent nearly a month just researching the native ad tech landscape. Mm-hmm. At the time when I thought I was done with the research, I had found 272 native ad tech companies.
Wow.
And then I published the infographic, and then people started coming out the woodwork. Hey, you forgot us, you forgot us, you forgot us, you forgot us. And I created a series of alerts that keep rolling in, and I keep finding new ones. Mm-hmm. So it's up over 350 now.
Mm.
So next year, whatever that number is, 350 to 400 or maybe more, I'll republish that infographic with all the new players.
So, I mean, there's a gold rush here. Yeah. I mean, we experienced this back in SEO days, but there's a gold rush of providers that can provide a network. Right.
And more than just a network. So there's even solutions that help publishers mm-hmm. implement, track, optimize
their
ad units.
Right. Got it. That's a lot of different ways to look at native advertising. And the same goes with any type of SaaS environment. You're going to see a standardization. I mean, there's going to be a lot of players that fizzle out over time. So betting on what horses to actually use to actually not only experiment with advertising, but knowing which ones are going to stay around.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, the 800-pound gorilla in the room is Facebook.
Right. Absolutely, and that is native advertising across the board.
Yeah.
You're in their sandbox. They're continually experimenting with different ways. Even in the instant messenger piece of Facebook, they were dabbling in advertising. Are they still in there?
So this is interesting you brought that up, because I ordered something from a website just, I think, 2 weeks ago. And instead of me getting an email with my tracking information, they'd send me an instant message on Messenger. And it was branded. I mean, that's native advertising.
Absolutely.
Right there.
Mm-hmm. Wow. See, I don't like that disruptor. Okay, if you're going to message me, oh, I didn't allow you to message me. I didn't give you rights to do that, but evidently I did, just by Facebook's legal documents that you have to sign up and agree to. All right, so this is the new realm. You have to be inside of native advertising if you want to continue to get your message consumed. I mean, you've got the audiences that are gravitating to different platforms, right? And you almost kind of start looking at different patterns of audiences. There's going to be that visual audience that's going to be bouncing around Facebook, but also be in Instagram. They'll also be in Pinterest, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got a native advertising wing or delivery mechanism for those visual ads, as opposed to the more contextual, more textual ads, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so. What you had mentioned before about how it's more and more becoming a place you have to go is native.
Yeah.
It makes macroeconomic sense. What I mean by that is a concept that Mark Schaefer talks about all the time. He coined the phrase content shock.
Yep.
So it's this idea that over the last 5 years, the amount of content on the internet, I think it's supposed to double like every 2 years, mm-hmm. right? Now, we could go deeper in that if you want, but that concept right there, think about it. There's only 10 positions on the first page of Google, and social media, for the most part, most of them have turned off organic visibility for brands.
Right.
Right? So it used to be, last decade, we were told, hey, build it and they will come. You build it, you do some SEO tweaks, mm-hmm. and you create a bunch of content, and Google will – and social media will give you the traffic you need.
Right.
Well, there's much more competition today. So what channel do, say, content marketers have? Well, so content marketers produce mostly top funnel content. Mm-hmm. Okay, what I mean by that is helpful content. It's not selling anything.
Right. Awareness level content.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And that type of content, most marketers aren't going to spend PPC dollars to promote that content. There's right. a good reason why, because it's too expensive, because you still got to move that person to the middle and to the bottom and to a customer.
Right.
Right. So PPC is out of the question. Banner ads don't work. So how do you promote the content? Native advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we're seeing, if you look at Google Trends and you look at, I think it's display advertising, PPC, or maybe just pay-per-click, mm-hmm. and native advertising, what you're seeing is native advertising is converging and looks like it will eventually start to pass both of those.
Really?
And most of that's powered by, in my opinion, is powered by all the content marketing that's happening by brands.
Oh, wow. So getting to your content shock, and Mark Schaefer is a good friend of the show, and we had him on here recently. There is such a glut of content, and we've seen it for a number of years now. Are you beginning to see the reluctance of consumers to actually get even to those awareness level pieces of content? What I'm understanding is that they're in these native platforms because they're consuming so many things along with that native content or that native advertising content. They're in Facebook because their intent is to interact with their friends and family, right? Mm-hmm. And if that glut of content keeps on permeating that membrane, right, inside of native advertising, they're going to recede even more away from those platforms. So it's kind of like everybody's moved over here. Now native content and native advertising's moving into that same space as well. The internet savvy consumer, the internet savvy consumer of advertising, is going to be pushing back because there's these areas where they thought were maybe sacrosanct in their cohabitation mm-hmm. on the online space. It's now burgeoning over the walls, and now they it used to be that they could go to these articles. Now those articles are coming where they are.
Right, right. So two things. Do you remember what the click-through rate was on the first display ad?
Oh, it was abysmal.
No, the first display ad ever from the 90s, I think it was 44%.
Okay.
Ever.
Okay.
Okay. Today it's like you're more likely to survive a plane crash than click on a banner ad. Seriously.
Yeah. Exactly.
You're actually more likely to finish Navy SEALs training than click on a banner ad. That's one stat.
And by the way, thank you for saying, I forgot to actually mention you did serve, and thank you so much for your service as well, especially going into July 4th weekend. We want to talk about that a little bit later, but thanks so much for doing that. Keep on going.
It's my pleasure and honor. It actually crafted my career.
Oh, really?
I wouldn't be the same person I am today if I wouldn't have served.
But, oh, very cool.
But so, so there is a fear that just like display advertising, mm-hmm. it started off awesome,
right,
and just trickled off and trickled off and trickled off. So that is a fear.
Yeah.
But in today's age, there's a pressure to make that not happen because of the way targeting is.
Mm-hmm.
So Facebook rarely ever feeds me up an ad that's not relevant.
Right.
It's rare.
Relevance is the key to everything. But I guess where I'm going is, even if it's most relevant, right, and the system is known by the consumer that, okay, they're giving me what I'm looking for. It's that numbness of the online consumer to be able to not have any area where they can just see a network with their friends and family, you know?
Yeah, well, and that's just Facebook. I mean, there's lots of other channels and other things. But I think Facebook is pretty safe for now. There could be some... what's the word I'm looking for? Some fatigue at some point. I don't feel it myself, but then again, I don't represent your average.
You're a bloody marketer.
So this
is just getting good.
So, yeah. But so here's the thing. We're entering into an era of big data that's going to provide unprecedented targeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I showed this watch earlier. This watch is collecting bio data for
mm-hmm.
me. It's highly likely that the future, if you also include the Internet of Things information.
Right.
I mean, I've got thermostats collecting information on my home, right? I thought I saw a connected, I saw something that was connected that shocked me. It was a—
Literally shocked you?
I think it was a bed. Actually.
Seriously?
Yeah, there's an internet connected bed.
Oh my Lord.
Now, so anyway, so all this disparate data is being collected.
Right.
And it's going to be used to target us.
Yep.
And target us well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a recent show where we were talking about the transactional hub that is going to be in everybody's home. It's not going to be that refrigerator can order for you, or that bed can fluff your pillow and order another sheet or whatever. It's not going to be that disparate, because there's no level of trust in all of those different businesses. It's all going to be collected by your Amazon or by your Google Home, where you can actually trust that it knows your biorhythms. It knows when you need— I mean, even to that degree, that's scary. We're going to be turned into cyborgs here soon, otherwise, right? Or we're really building Skynet.
Well, have you ever seen the movie Minority Report?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Uh-huh.
So he's wearing a wearable that tracks his bios and it tracks his emotions. So when he's running and he's all nervous, they offer him up some Guinness.
Yep.
How's that for native advertising? Yep.
Now, that was creepy, because he was walking down the hall or down the mall, and all the ads were hitting him. Hey, John, come on over here.
And they talk to him and they're totally targeted. So that— I mean, that might not be till 2050, 2030. I don't know. But there'll be a day. I mean, the infrastructure is being built now to go absolutely. That direction.
We're literally going to be driven insane. You realize that?
I don't know. I mean, I think it'd be pretty cool. I think I don't drink coffee. I don't want to see coffee ads all the time on my Facebook feed. I'd rather see sports stuff or peanut butter pie stuff, you know?
Is this some subtle hint to stop bringing you a bag of coffee every week?
No, I mean, it's just— I'm a millennial, so I destroy economies and only eat avocado toast. No, so that's the targeting I see. But if marketers know that, hey, I like Ohio State, and I don't drink coffee, and so if I could see targets and stuff that's interesting to me, you know.
But at the same time, what you're talking about is actually being able to provide the advertising system valuable data of how to adjust and learn, and not have these archetypes or these stigma, or even these profiles. We hate the user profiles, but we have to do them because we have to try to pinpoint. But actually having an environment that's an AI environment that can actually learn and sample and be able to provide feedback back, so you have even sharper of a advertising engine, right? That's cool, but it's still creepy.
And then at the end of the day, if AI is starting to really get involved in machine learning and native advertising and even other things as well. But at the end of the day, if you have some intern that's doing shitty targeting on Facebook, right?
Yep.
You can't stop that. Facebook's going to take their money. But the campaign's not going to be successful, and they'll stop spending money.
Yep. Right.
So, but at the end of the day, you're always going to have that until AI is more deeply integrated.
Yeah. No. All righty. Hey, getting into content promotion, what would you define as quality content? I mean, we're talking about all the advertising and all the mechanics of getting that content more consumed now. In different platforms as opposed to people going to those pages, right? Mm-hmm. But what is quality content, especially in the realm of fake news now? How do you even define quality content?
So as a marketer, as a content marketer, I define quality content as content that gets engaged with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's the engagement tied to a KPI that I want to happen.
Right.
Okay. Generally speaking, a lot of the solutions out there are tracking engagement by time on site and scroll depth. Okay.
Yep.
So there's actually some solutions out there that are being built and tailored for content marketers, because they'll do a paper engagement model where you don't pay for a click or a view.
Right.
You actually pay for if they scroll or spend a certain amount of time with your content.
And they have a trigger at that point in time, a scroll that can actually do a feedback.
Yeah.
The whole content, the pay-per-action model that Google had for such a long time, where, again, it was a conversion point, but you got to go further up that you still have to have engagement before you ever get to a conversion point.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's two types of content marketers. There's two types of way of thinking about good content. Okay. I can go to a conference and sit and watch a thought leader discuss huggy feely stuff. You know, like you have to emotionally connect with your audience, and you have to do, you know, that's fine. There's a place for that.
Right.
Okay. But at the end of the day, what defines quality content is content that worked. Right.
Yep.
And if you can have content on your website that will work, but if nobody sees it, it's no good.
Right. Right. It's not doing anything for you. And that's the utility concept, mm-hmm. right? Making sure that's useful content, mm-hmm. that people want when they want it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very good. Very good. And to further the thought of quality content, are there other KPIs that you'd be looking at besides scroll length and time on page?
Those are the main ones. I'd take it to at some type of action, mm-hmm. you know. So I'm a full funnel tracker. I track the entire funnel from top to bottom.
Good, good, good.
So yeah, that's how I track it and take note of all that.
Very good. So we've been looking at a number of your publications, and you've shared so much in infographics and ebooks. Let me ask you this quick question about content promotion. What's the dirty little secret about content marketing?
Well, content marketers like to think that everybody cares about what they're doing. And the truth of the matter is nobody cares about your content quality but you.
Oh, no. You can't tell them. They're precious snowflakes. They can't hear this.
So my point is, by saying that, is if you're publishing shitty content,
right,
nobody cares. If you're publishing great content, nobody cares. It's you have to have content that's seen. Mm-hmm. That matters.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Any other thoughts about the quality content realm? Because, I mean, this has been the biggest challenge of the content shock and the glut of content that's out there, the fake news that is really, I'm surprised that it's still around. I'm surprised that it's getting that much play regularly,
mm-hmm.
except that, I mean, it was all about the political race at the end of the year. So, sure. I mean, the news organizations are trying to continue to stoke the focus on
it. I'd be interested to see, especially a lot of this fake news stuff, how much, like, the analytics of these websites, you know, how much of it is just people reading headlines and just sharing the article versus actually clicking on it and reading it, and, you know.
It's very clickbaity. That's a lot of what's going on. So I did a little bit of research around this. So most of this stuff is being produced outside of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's being produced in Eastern Europe and other places, right? Mm-hmm. I think Romania, and there's another small country over there. They've got like farms of people doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is they'll create this article with this crazy headline, and I actually go into Facebook,
mm-hmm.
and they'll find the most partisan groups.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll test it. They'll drop it. And those groups will take those and make them go viral.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they're doing it. They're doing it with clickbait. And they take the lessons they learn in the different groups, and they tweak and apply it. So a lot of this is on Facebook.
Yeah. No, it absolutely is. And the news broke, what was it, a week ago or 2 weeks ago, about a clickbait farm in the Philippines.
Mm.
Where they literally had thousands of phones lined up on shelves, and all they were doing was literally clicking the articles on all these smartphones.
Yeah, I actually saw that. I forgot. That's crazy.
Oh, it's not. So you have the ecosystem. It's completely fabricated from producers to the fabricated audience clicking it. You almost wonder whether or not there are two countries at war going, okay, we're going to push here, we're going to click here. But literally, it's all fabricated analytics, fabricated traffic.
Yeah.
And at some point in time, you gotta hold your hand up and get off this turnstile.
Well, so they're trying to fake it till they make it.
Yeah,
is what they're doing. And if you notice on these sites, when you click on them, they have display advertising everywhere. They have pop-ups everywhere.
Right.
And generally, they like to use lists. So you have to scroll through, and it adds impressions. And every time there's an impression, they can make more money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're making money that way. Now, it's likely that different foreign governments are bankrolling some of these as well.
Oh, wow.
But I don't know for a fact, but it's likely.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that whatsoever. That in its own right is just scary, because as much as we try to work in metrics, and digital marketing is about metrics, and that's the best thing, the convergence of content and marketing into measurable factual data that you can work off of, right? Mm-hmm. Then you have those type of things out there that they kind of dissolve your belief in a true system. But on top of everything else, I mean, there are some things that are regularly, as marketers who've been in the field for a long period of time, you see trends come and go, and you see patterns starting to reapply themselves. Yep, we're going to be looking at this as there's going to be a shorter window regularly of these type of spammy type of applications happening now, right?
Yeah. So it's likely that the technology, as well as the user reporting, mm-hmm. is going to help start to clean this stuff up. Google's made a commitment. Facebook's made a commitment. They're making it easier to report. What's going to end up happening is I believe those IP addresses are going to start being noticed, like the bad, like link farms and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And they'll be able to shut them all down from a certain IP range, mm-hmm. Unless they mask it. So we'll see. It's a war. So they're playing with Google and Facebook and probably some other ones.
No, I would agree with you. Well, to wrap up, Chad, and we certainly appreciate all your time today. What bugs you about your industry right now? And I mean, we could go long on this.
No, we're fine. So look, you've been around. We remember last decade, you know, we were told, hey, build it and they will come. Mm-hmm. Just publish it. Publish as much content as you can. Publish right. and pray. Google will eventually turn around. If you do a couple tweaks here, tweaks there, Google will deliver all the audience you need, mm-hmm. right? And there were some pretty big, well-known brands that were built that way last decade. I mean, think about SEO Moz or Moz now.
Right.
Okay. Or HubSpot.
Right.
I mean, literally the publish and pray model. Now, granted, they were a little more sophisticated, you know, but it worked.
Mm-hmm.
That was in an era of what I call content deficits. That means there was more people on the internet searching for problems mm-hmm. than there was content with solutions to those problems.
Right.
And that dynamic mostly built my career online, right? Well, what I just talked about earlier with the content shock, and with the doubling of the amount of content on the internet every mm-hmm. every 2 years or whatever it is, every year, I forget what the number is. But now we're in an era of content surpluses. Mm-hmm. So now there's only X amount of people searching for problems on the internet, but there's way more solutions, right? So that's where content shock comes. Okay, so the whole build it and they will come, publish and pray model of last decade, some people are still trying to do it today. I know because I talked to brands. And two things they don't have. They don't have a content strategy, an overall arching strategy. They have no promotion plan built into that strategy. They just have organic. And they have no budgets. You know, I just said earlier about, TV ad execs, they spend $5 on distribution for every $1 they spend on creation. We're not doing that in digital for the most part. We're not, unless you're doing PPC or display.
Right, right. Now, you're absolutely right. I did want to ask you one thing about threats of government regulation of the internet under the guise of security.
Yeah, so we all remember SOPA, PIPA, mm-hmm. They keep coming up with another flavor every year, every 2 years, whatever it is.
Right.
That scares the crap out of me. I believe in a free and open internet. And so I just hope that the next round, when they try to do it again here in the U.S., that we're able to stop them again.
Well, it's actually happening right now. It's the ADA website compliance realm, where it's making content compliant for the visually impaired and the auditorily impaired, the 508, 504 issues. We're actually diving into that as one of our services. And the fact of the matter is that all this content that's out there, all the video content, is not captioned. And the government's coming through and actually penalizing. Winn-Dixie just had a $100,000 penalty from the DOJ and the DOE.
Wow.
I'm sorry, OCR, because their content wasn't accessible. Thank you. thank you, Jim. Wasn't accessible with these JAWS readers that literally we had for two decades.
See, I had no idea that was happening.
Oh, we got to talk about this offline.
I thought alt text was good enough.
Oh my god!
Apparently not.
No, I mean, and there's a whole other recycle.
There's a bunch, yeah,
that's why I wanted to ask about one of these key points you brought up, is because this is an entire new recycle of this accessibility law that's really the government's fired up. I mean, they're going after school districts right now. About 16,000 lawsuits in the last 5 years. Off of this accessibility compliance law, so you're right, you're in the same space, because all this content that's out there, now it's going to be regulated again. So we're having to inventory all of the images and put alt text against all the things, and training content publishers, and with assurance level, the making sure that all that stuff's getting out there with compliance.
Well, at the end of the day, though, you know what? It is a good thing.
Right.
The fines and stuff aren't a good thing, but what I'm talking about is fast and slow lanes.
Right.
Yeah. So, free and open internet, just one lane for everybody.
Yeah. No, I'd agree with you. Thanks for allowing me to just interject there, because it's top of mind for what we're dealing with over here. And it's getting pretty bad out there. It's kind of scary.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. So what excites you about your industry right now?
So most people realize that publishers have lost revenue year over year over year. I mean, as a whole, since basically a little bit after the internet went online, for the mass consumers, right? Their business models have completely changed. And new publishers are starting to crop up that are changing the game. So think BuzzFeed. I think I read 75% of BuzzFeed's revenue is native advertising. And I've been all throughout Europe. When you go to a content marketing event in Europe, the main sponsors are publishers, because they want to write long-form native advertising, and they're putting their money where their mouth is, and they're investing in their marketing. So seeing the rise and the growth of the publisher's content studios, I think is pretty exciting. And it's going to help them shore up the revenues they lost from two decades ago. They may not make it up all the way, but they're going to make up a lot of it.
Oh, fantastic. And that gives hope into the marketing space, because there are diminishing returns regularly.
Yeah.
But that is exciting to be able to see the new model that's based with big data and programmatic, that we can actually target so much better than the display ad of late,
Yeah. So they're making revenue both on long form and both on programmatic, and some have non-programmatic. And believe it or not, the New York Times is doing native advertising in virtual reality now.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my lord.
Yeah.
We have to all get some Oculus and dive in there.
That's right.
Chad, any final words for our audience? Any final thoughts that you'd like to express just regarding online marketing and native advertising? That's a big jump ball there, but what do you think?
Yeah, so what I'd like to tell the audience is simple. If you're not doing native advertising yet and you're producing content, you will be doing native advertising. It's just a matter of time. It's not a scary thing. You can dip your toe in the water in Facebook. Mm-hmm. I in fact know someone that he only spends $50 to $200 a month, and he takes his best two performing organic articles, and he uses Facebook and Twitter to natively distribute those two articles. And actually, he doesn't even track his target or track. He doesn't even target his personas that are his customers. He actually targets the media, the influencers, and the journalists that cover the beat of the topic of his articles. So what he's trying to do is he's using paid media to earn media and amplify it all on all three channels.
That's cool. Well, I mean, it's certainly we're going to be following you regularly because you're right there at the edge of, no pun intended, of observation of where the new marketing is. And we're all, anybody who's listening to this, we're all digital consumers, and we're in this native space. And that is absolutely the delivery that is paying dividends right now. So thank you so much for being that Sherpa, giving good information about this. Some fun information to wrap up. You once finished second in an event at the International Foosball Champions in Vegas. Dude, I'm a huge foosball fan. We're about to put a foosball table here in the
Make sure it's a tornado table.
Okay. I got to ask you about this off after the show because got to get some input. But you, but that's pretty big numbers though. I mean, they must be wicked fast.
Well, yeah. So there's a bunch of events because it's a big international tourney. But one of the events, I finished second. I learned something in college.
So why tornado?
That's the pro standard.
That's the pro standard.
Yeah. I've got one at home.
Now, have you seen the foosball tables that literally are 8-man foosball tables?
Yeah, I've seen those. They're kind of chintzy European style.
Oh, yeah.
I like my tornado.
All right. I got to take the advice here. See, you can hit jaw-dropping aerial shots. In fact, it's the most viewed YouTube video that you've ever posted. Do we have that?
No, I didn't. I didn't queue it up. But
it's okay.
Yeah, okay. Describe. I watched it, but yeah, describe what an aerial shot is in foosball.
Yeah, so it's actually now illegal. It didn't used to be illegal. But anyway, so you take the ball and you knock it between your two bat guys, and you pop it up in the air.
Yeah.
And then you flip it on top of this guy, and you move the guy towards the other goal, and you flip the ball up in the air into the goal.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And it's nothing but net. Just go straight in there.
Yeah. Otherwise, you'll miss. Now, it's hard to hit. But so out of every web video I've ever been a part of through my career, and there's a ton of them, that one has outperformed every video I've ever done in my life, including every webinar, everything.
Fantastic. Well, challenge accepted. All right, fine. Is there anything else that you that we could possibly promote for you?
If you go to my site, chadpollitt.com, or just Google search me, it's the site's easy to find. I have all my last four books there for free. Mm-hmm. You can download them if you'd like. In addition, I encourage you to go to the nativeadvertisinginstitute.com and subscribe to the blog. Mm-hmm. There's also a resource section there with tons of stuff for the audience. And lastly, I wanted to mention that I do teach a content marketing course online with Mark Schaefer and Ian Cleary, and it's at Rutgers University. So if you do a search on Google for content marketing Rutgers, you'll find the page. And if you're interested in getting a certificate from Rutgers University in content marketing taught by the gentleman that I mentioned and myself, you can go there and use the code FRIEND10. And you can get a 10% discount.
Fantastic. So, yeah, definitely go check out all the books. And if you're interested in these levels of certification and instructional courses, I mean, check out what we've got here. The code, again, is what?
FRIEND10.
FRIEND10, and you can go to nativeadvertisinginstitute.com, right?
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Well, check out Chad on Twitter at Chad Pollitt, at Pollitt. Go check him out on LinkedIn, Instagram as well, with a U at the end of IU. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thanks so much for all your time today and truly insightful things. And native advertising, my gosh, if you're not in that space, try it out. There's so many providers, 350 different type of aggregators and tools out there to be able to dip your toe in this. And you're going to see some fantastic results, right?
Yeah.
If you do it right.
If you do it right. It all takes practice, though.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to Edge of the Web Radio. A special thank you to our guests here, our guest today, Chad Pallett. You know, check out everything we talk about. Go look at some of the additional videos that we've done with Edge of the Web Radio, because you will get a huge amount of instruction and guidance. And it's only because of thought leaders like Chad and our guests that we can deliver this type of content regularly to you. So check out all the must-see videos and insider information at edgeofthewebradio.com. That's edgeofthewebradio.com. We will talk to you next week. Don't be a piece of cyber driftwood.